Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Pictures at the door, hear them crawl across the floor. It's monsters and more. Where the heavy dust of fright while they rise into the night. It's monsters and more. I know you're expecting blood and gore, but you don't have to fear no more. For on the show tonight, monsters only bring the light. They're here to talk and chat, and sometimes see the past. It's monsters and more. I know you feel it's time to die, but it's just time for George and Fry!
Monsters and More Radio was recorded before a dead studio audience.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Monsters and More Radio. I'm your host, George the Zombie, and with me, as always, is the lovely and ever-talented Miss Sci-Fi. How are you doing tonight, Sci?
Well, I survived the city of brothers with guns, and by that I mean Philadelphia. Though, interestingly enough, Blackheart, myself, and Triptych went to a centrifuge that is a fallout shelter, mounted to the bedrock, and her very own Ray Bizarre, she managed to break something.
I'm proud of her for that.
How was your weekend, George?
It was interesting. I was at Zombie Fest this weekend, had a lot of fun. Got to talk to the people from the Travel Channel and was actually in, I'm at least in the background of most of the footage they caught this weekend, so it's kind of cool. I actually have some speaking parts for the episode, but it was fun. We have a cool guest and a mystery guest. With us on the air live is Derek Young from, where are you from, Derek? I know it sounds south.
Martinsville, Virginia.
Martinsville. So how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. How have you guys been since Sci-Fi in the Valley?
Doing good. It's been a blur. As always, you know, we try to hit as many conventions as we can. I lost track of our number. Do you remember it? Sorry, I think we're around 16.
Dude, I can't count. I can count to four. I'm a DJ. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I can do it in various timings.
Okay, so if it's 16, then you've counted to four times. So we're all right.
Yes, but if it's any more than four times four, I'm screwed. Because I can only work with four.
Well, it'll be all right. No. But anyway, yes, I do have you guys a fun mystery guest calling in. She's a good friend of mine, and she's supposed to, if I get the funding for my new film, it's supposed to play one of the characters in it. So it's going to be cool that hopefully she makes it in. But I got the confirmation that she will. So I hope you guys enjoy the mystery guest.
Okay, I think we will. I know you've... been and produced, I think, at least three that I know of.
I've written, produced, and made two. I was associate producer on two others. I've acted in several, and I'm working on producing my third right now, which I wrote the story for, but Alex Vincent, who everybody knows is Andy from Child's Play, he has revamped it. He has written the screenplay for me, and he's actually working on editing the new teaser trailer for investors right now.
Okay, that sounds like fun. I always love teaser trailers. They give you a little bit of the inside of the movie without taking too much, and they have a tendency to be fun.
Yeah, being as I've been teaching myself everything, this is from the learning process that I've gained. This is going to be the best teaser I've put out so far. So I'm hoping everybody likes it.
Well, I'd personally like to see that myself. I know you've done work, because I've seen the film with him, and you've done work with Jeremy Ambler, who, you know, has some notoriety for being in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, a lot of people doesn't realize that there are a lot of films Jeremy's got to be a featured extra in that, if you take the time, if you know who he is and look, you see him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, just the other day I was watching Adventureland, and there's a part where they go to the club and they're dancing, and Jeremy, every time the camera cuts, you see him in the background dancing with some girls. If you know him, you really notice him. When in American Pie Reunion, when the guys go to the bar and meet up for the first time, there's the bartender, Jeremy, sitting at the bar right beside the bartender, and his face is dead square in the shots. So, I mean, he's starting to get a lot of notice. A lot of the casting directors constantly call him back. I know he's worked on two of the Harold and Kumar films. So.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember he said something about that new thing with Lincoln.
Oh, yeah, he did. It's a TV movie about Lincoln, and he did a lot of stunts. He did some stunts in it, and he actually has a lot of dialogue in it. So it's going to be something that's going to catapult him even more.
Yeah, and
but of course, The Walking Dead has him way up there with fans right now. So.
Mm-hmm. I think with a lot of the actors, and that's a good thing. And to be honest, you know, I've met Jeremy in person a couple times. He's just an honestly nice guy.
Oh, he is, dude. He's truly a genuine soul. You know, he's a great guy to be around. Oddly enough, a lot of people haven't got to see his full acting potential yet, but he's getting ready to have it come out there, and dude is on point with being able to pull off exactly what you want him to do. Prime example is in my film Family Property. I actually called on Jeremy at the last minute, actually wrote him in a nice little part at the last minute, but the majority of the stuff we did on set was full ad-lib because I had to use a lot of people that didn't know how to act just because it was my first film, and
mm-hmm.
had to use a lot of family members. But Jeremy pulled off exactly what I wanted to, you know. And everybody if you watch Family Property, which actually is now titled Family Property Backwoods Killing Spree because of the distribution company that got it. They changed the title of it. But if you get a chance to watch it, you actually get to see Jeremy die as himself instead of as a zombie. So,
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
I think my copy I have is one of the original ones.
Yeah, it was one of the original Raw uncut versions. I've done a lot of work to it since then. But it's real cool because a lot of people that have watched it have actually sat down and compared it to having the feeling of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre just because of how raw it is. I left a lot of the rawness to it, but I fixed a few of the things that a lot of people were saying could turn people away. So I went in and adjusted the sound a little bit, made a few tweaks to it, and hopefully everybody likes it.
Yeah, I've seen there's a rash of a lot of smaller budget independent movies that the thing I liked about yours is it still has a cinematic integrity. A lot of the up and coming films seem to have a little bit of choppiness.
Yeah, it was real hard to do that too, man. It took me a year of sitting down, watching a bunch of 70s grindhouse films to get that feeling so that I could go in and try and make it. You know, it was real hard to take what I had and break it down to where it came into that cinematic feel. But I'm real happy with the way that it turned out. You know, it showed at Scarefest. It's getting ready to start showing at some conventions here soon. And it's slowly picking up. Now my second film, Midnight Matinee Psycho, it's already out on Amazon to get. I got distribution for it as well. And was actually accepted to the Virginia Film Festival with it, where it had a good turnout, and I'm real proud of that one. It's being my first project to where I actually have a lot of named cameos. I was able to get Ari Lehman, the first Jason Voorhees, PJ Souls from Halloween, of course, our good pal Sal, the vampire Santa Lizard. I got Mike Holman from Jackass, and Mike Christopher from Dawn of the Dead, and Victor Miller, who's of course, the father of Friday the 13th by writing and creating it. And I had Paul Madman Mars Ehlers do my special introduction for me. And a lot of people won't recognize him now, but Tom Candela, who was credited, he was called, his name on Madman was Jimmy Steele, is his acting name, but his character was actually the wonderful kid who sits down and calls out Madman. So, and his name was Richie in the film. So I actually, in this film, which really makes me very proud of it, I did the first ever reunion on screen between Victor Miller and Ari Lehman, and the first reunion on screen for Madman and Tom Candela, which is astounding for me, you know, because it's awesome to be able to say, you know, I did their first on-screen reunion in 30 years from the time that they did the films that everybody loves to this day.
And for horror people like me, that's awesome. Little stuff like that matters. Because let's face it, we're all big kids.
But the cool thing at the beginning of Midnight Matinee Psycho, the special introduction, Paul actually does the 80s-style horror host introducing the film. He designed the entire set. He got somebody that's friends with his son to film it, and they did everything as far as the editing and all and sent me the introduction. So I'm very proud of that.
So what made you want to start doing film?
Well, I started off making little shorts with my friends when I was like 12. And my friend, he constantly kept coming up with movies for us to make. But whenever it come time to make them, he'd call them off. And I got sick and tired of waiting. I had a location. I kept casting movies for him, typing screenplays for him, putting in all this work, and nothing ever happened. So, like, you know what? I may not have learned anything about being able to make a movie except for what I've seen on set, but I'm tired of talking about it. So I took the cast that I had the last time that we tried something and a location that we had, and I sat down and wrote up a story and went ahead and shot it. and it kind of gave me the filmmaking bug, and I've been there ever since.
I can kind of relate that. I, for the most part, most of my life, I was off stage. But recently, I've been doing more, you know, video and movie stuff, and it's addicting. It really is.
It's just like conventions, man. Whenever you're able to be on set for a long time, everybody becomes kind of a family, just like they do at cons. And, you know, especially, I mean, you know, it was proven to me, like when we were at Sci-Fi in the Valley, how easily everybody can become a family. Because that was the first time I met you guys. Nobody knew who the hell I was, nothing about me. And got to hang out with you guys, and you were kind enough to, considering I was having a bad weekend, bring me a sandwich so that I could eat some, and it was awesome, man. And I appreciate that wholeheartedly, I do.
Are you coming back this year?
Am I coming back? Yes.
To the Sci-Fi in the Valley?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I wouldn't miss it, because it's going to be the only way I'm going to be able to see you guys. You know, every convention I've done since then, I haven't been able to run into all you guys. And I know you guys will be there. So
yeah, you're going to be there. Back.
Actually, they just announced me. They just announced me the other day. So
as far as I know, I think I'm still being active MC again this year.
I hope so,
and as far as we know, we're still doing the after party. Oh,
well, all I know is you guys put on a rocking con. So, you know,
a lot of that goes to Casey. That was, you know, his big dream he realized. He did very well with it.
Yeah. But, you know, you guys had that spunk that made everything good while it was going on. So, you need to have that. Because I've heard a lot of people trying to do it.
Fun.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people try and do it, and they're all like, it just sounds like you're ready to fall asleep when they do it. You know what I mean? They weren't ready for it. And you guys just had this hyped up vibe the whole weekend that just never stopped, even with no sleep. And it was like crazy, you know? So
we had four cases of balls. Literally, we had four cases of balls. The energy drink.
Yeah, I know. Every time I looked over, you were like, yep, that's good, man. That's good.
It's good crack.
I mean,
at one point, I was ready to fall asleep on my table, and I was like, man, I wished I had some of that.
Next year, we'll make sure you have just remember,
yeah, maybe then people will be more interacting with me because I won't be so tired.
I think we have
but, you know, sleeping
let's
in your...
Let's bring our mystery guest on.
Oh, right. I'm glad you made it.
Uh-oh, I don't like surprises.
Oh, you did find the last one. Hey, you are our mystery guest. Welcome to Monsters and More Radio. Who are we talking to?
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, this is Camille.
Oh, hi,
everybody.
Yeah, this is
Camille
this
Keaton
cute.
From
this
I Spit on Your Grave.
I'll take.
Hi.
How's it going, Camille? It's Derek.
Hi, Derek. It's going really well. And just getting used to Florida sun and humidity yet once again. It's nice down here.
I'm glad you were able to make it in.
Thank you.
We were having a fun conversation, and I was telling them I knew they would enjoy the surprise I had for them. So.
Oh, thank you.
So now,
but anyway,
now that we know
for every...
who our call this guest is, welcome, Camille, to Monsters and More Radio.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be here. Hello, everybody. Hi.
Yeah, George, I had to have Camille call in because my new film that I had mentioned that, you know, I had Alex Vincent working on. Camille, if I get the funding, which I'm getting ready to throw up an Indiegogo to try and get fans to help out. So any Monsters and More Radio listeners, be looking for that. But Camille actually has, if I get the funding, she's going to be in the film. So it's
awesome.
Going to be great.
Great.
And I actually got to just finish reprising a character from the Vampires of Zanzibar that I acted in this film called Deadline. In this film called Deadline, that Camille got to play Principal Beasley.
A lot of fun.
So,
I enjoyed that very much.
So I can't wait, because I'm actually going to be in a film starring Camille Keaton. I'm moving up in the world.
Starring Derek Young.
I'm moving up in the world. It also has Matthew Ewald. I always mess up his name. Matthew Ewald, who was in Galador. So that's a fun project for everybody to be looking out for.
Yeah.
Deadlines?
Yeah, Deadlines.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it really went well, and I think it will go well from here. And had a lot of fun working on it, which I've probably already mentioned at least once. But, I mean, it was really neat to be able to play the character of Principal Beasley, someone that's irritable and disgusted. So I thought, well, this is a shoo-in. I can do this.
I know you're dying to do a question about Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, I was just going to ask what it was like playing the role for that movie. Spit on Your Grave is a semi-controversial, very well-known film. How did it affect you playing the lead for that?
How did it affect me at the time or afterwards?
Both.
Well, at the time, I was just, you know, happy to get a part in an American film. Most of my films had been made in Italy before that, and certainly I had some reservations about it. After I found out I had the part, then I really started scrutinizing the script and saying, oh, how are they going to film this and that, et cetera. And, you know, I took a safeguard that... you know, I think I did the right thing by calling the Screen Actors Guild, and I wasn't a member at the time, and I asked them, you know, what could I do to protect myself for the future in case the film becomes the property of another entity. And how I felt about it afterwards was fine. It was very disturbing to see. Even though I knew I was in it and I was, you know, doing the acting, and it was really quite shocking to see on screen.
Very different to watch it with the editing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, and then I saw it again, like, about 4 or 5 years ago in Canada. And now I look at it a lot more objectively, and I say, well, they should, you know, for the R-rated version, I was thinking, they shouldn't have cut that, they shouldn't have cut that. I mean, you know, because this is a film that I was, like, kind of hoping would never come out, you know, because there's the nudity, and there are my relatives, and I'm thinking, what if, I don't want them to see this film, and eventually my mother and father did see the film, not together, but separately, and but I've had no after effects as far as, say, nightmares or anything like that. And it's all been good stuff for the last 2 years, you know, because there are people out there that really appreciate the film.
Yeah, it was, I enjoyed it. It was, there was just some great cinematic moments. And to be honest, you know, I'm a horror fan, so I love any kill scene. I Spit on Your Grave has some very interesting kill scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it to me is like in a category by itself, you know, it's not a vampire film, and I know you just did one, and it's I just kind of like, I want to say, Across the Train to Deliverance. Yeah, absolute real horror.
Yeah. Do you think doing that film altered the course of your career? Do you think it had influence on your future bookings?
You know, I really don't know. After that, I moved to L.A. I mean, what happened was, after the film, after a little while, the director, writer, and I were married, and we were living in New York, where it was cast out of trade, I'm sorry, that's AOL, out of the trade paper backstage. We went to Hollywood, or Los Angeles, and I don't really know, to tell you the truth. I don't think that it would. In fact, the agent that I have now, he happens to be a good agent, and he likes the film. So he was a fan of the film. So, but back before, I don't know. It could have. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, the thing I liked about the film, yes, it delves into a very dark subject, but it also isn't quite as, you know, just outright blatantly gory for no sensible reason. You know, you can see there's a timeline in what happened. So it has that sense of kind of a reality to it, where you can see this happening, which, you know, in the same point makes it believable, but also makes it more horrific.
Right.
It's funny you said that, man, because Alex actually wrote Josie to be the exact same way, as far as everything being so realistic that it makes it hit home and feel just even 10 times worse than it probably would.
I know that's kind of one of the things that Alfred Hitchcock was so famous for. He could take, you know, everyday objects that, you know, we deal with every day and just turn them extremely frightening. You know, anyone who's watched The Birds, anytime you see a flock of birds, your mind goes there.
Oh, yeah. We've just seen a few of them on the internet recently. You know, it's like, look at this, you know, and you do.
You know, and that's our culture, and it's also the way our psychics work. I mean, you know, music also plays a large part of that. You know, you go to the beach with a boombox that has the soundtrack from Jaws on it, you play it, everyone's coming out of the water. Now, it doesn't mean that there's any more sharks there than there were before, but everyone has that mindset.
Oh, exactly. And a terrible music score can ruin a film as well. I mean, you just have to have the perfect music score. And if it doesn't, if the music score doesn't fit the mood of the film, I mean, prime example, Halloween. John Carpenter and everybody took Halloween to the distributors and investors without music. Nobody wanted to pick it up. Same thing with Friday the 13th. Once they put the music score to it, gave it that feeling, all of a sudden everybody wanted it.
Interesting.
Well, it becomes another character. It really does. You know, that's
I heard somebody screaming.
Oh, no. sirens are flying by as we're talking.
Oh, okay.
Something's on fire.
No, actually, it was an ambulance, so apparently something's happened to somebody.
Oh, sirens? Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hey, that's what happens when you talk whore.
Yeah. It's horror. You got to have at least one ambulance sound or, you know, a scream.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to have something.
That
man, don't everybody love the realism of the show?
Yeah, and, you know, we're coming on Halloween, so it's naturally a propensity to be, you know, frightened. It's a pure and simple fact. Everyone loves to be frightened.
It's a good escapism.
Mm-hmm.
It takes your mind off of what's going on that's you don't want to look at in your own life or temporarily.
Yeah, and that's why they have roller coasters.
Yes.
And why people jump out of perfectly good airplanes for no specific reason.
That's also the reason why horror film is the biggest genre in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Because people like to say, well, you know what, my life is not as bad as that is.
Yeah. Well, I spent the whole, most of the weekend with zombies. And it was also fun because I got to spend some time with, you know, friends of mine. You know, it's not often that you can say that you've, you know, spent the afternoon with a person who really created a genre. I got to spend a lot of time with John Russo and George Kazan. You know, George Romero and John Russo invented zombies. The modern zombies all kind of trace back to Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. The actual funny part about that is George Romero brought to light the small hint of zombies that Ed Wood brought out in Plan 9.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what about
where
that
the
Plan
aliens
9?
Were bringing?
Sorry.
Where the aliens were bringing the dead people to life to fight everybody. You know, which is another cool thing because I got to play a zombie in the direct remake Plan 9 that's being done by John Johnson from Darkstone Entertainment that actually has Conrad Brooks from the original Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Nice.
That's so cool.
So we have two zombies on the phone right now. I've also been a vampire, so... I've been everything in the genre but a friggin' werewolf, so that's my next goal.
We gotta work on that.
Yeah, we gotta work on
it. Funny caller.
Even less than I understand the fascination with sparkling vampires, do I understand the fascination of werewolves? I mean, you smell like a wet dog and you're covered in fleas.
But it's that primordial terror.
Oh, I'm not saying they're not scary. I'm just saying the general fascination with them. It is relatively new.
Well, it goes back... Well, you figure it goes the whole way back to the early... You know, back into the 20s and the 30s. But the modern resurgence, yeah, that's been a little bit new with the, you know, American Werewolf in London. Simply because of the makeup technologies has given them the opportunity to portray the creature the way it should.
See, I liked American Werewolf in London. I was more referring to, and we can take the way the werewolves in The Howling, which were a god-awful series of movies, but still, were portrayed up until, you know, the mange-ridden ones with the sparkly vampires. Or maybe we should say the crew-cut werewolves with the sparkly vampires. I like the monster take on them.
I like
the wolfman
wolves.
Idea, where they're, you know, our kind of animal and in some ways a little wretched.
Well, my personal take is what makes them scary is the fact that it's a human person who is in events that are beyond their control. You know, because, you look back to Stephen King's Silver Bullet. You know, it was the pastor who was the werewolf,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, the most unseating person, but circumstances behind it.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Well,
I gotta say this. I'm really pissed off at the Twilight series because they actually made it like the Indians could control when they turned, which is completely against what werewolves really are.
Well,
you know, so.
Well, I think there are
a point, and it depends on the mythology and/or folklore, because lycanthropy, werewolves, or any of the variations thereof, depending on what culture, is anywhere from a straight-out uncontrollable curse to a, as a general term, shamanistic ability.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, for sake of film, it's always been the uncontrollable curse.
Mm-hmm.
They really shouldn't have took it outside of that just because they turned it into something corny and stupid, just like the sparkly vampires are.
Oh, I fully agree with that.
Well, we kind of have a need to categorize stuff and make it less scary. You know, we turn horror stories into nursery rhymes. You know, so we kind of have that natural propensity to make stuff that is scary unscary when some things just need to stay scary. You know, vampires.
That is true.
Trouble.
You know the great thing, though? I'm going to tell you the great thing. And this is coming from me. There's no way in hell that you can make Camille Keaton's I'll Spill on Your Grave unscary.
Yeah.
Unless you're an idiot doing a remake.
Well, I don't know. The Japanese might be able to do some. Well, no, it would probably still be frightening, though animated. Actually, I was going to ask a female's opinion, especially since, you know, the whole sexuality thing was a big thing with vampires. Impotent, semi, or questionably gay vampires of the 90s, or straight ones that glitter and can have kids of the 21st century? What's your preference?
I don't know, but I really had a thing for Barnabas Collins and Dark Shadows. Just to mention that, I want to squeeze that in while we're talking about vampires.
Right.
I used to run home, and that used to come on TV, a soap opera at 4 p.m.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't wait to see that, and I was head over heels in love with that guy.
Did you see the remake?
No, I have not, but I'm planning on it.
I'd like to know what you think of it.
Well, Camille, let me tell you this. If you
mm-hmm.
honestly like the original Barnabas series,
mm-hmm.
when you see
saw that. Oh, it's just in diapers that I saw that.
When you see the new one,
mm-hmm.
make sure you have all sharp objects away from your eyes.
Oh, okay.
So, you're going to be looking for something to gouge them out with.
Oh, I'm glad you told me that. It must be really scary.
Yes, very much so. It's kind of like the Mad Hatter playing Barnabas. Or Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, if he would have gone with Hunter S. Thompson, at least it would have been funny.
I mean, I hate to say it, but think Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with vampires.
I actually blocked that one out.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't like a lot of the stuff that Johnny Depp has done, because I do think he's a very interesting actor. But there are some things that you watch and you go,
to be funny.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Depp did an amazing job in The Secret Window and The Ninth Gate.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two great films by him that he was in. But ever since Jack Sparrow and the Mad Hatter has came along, he kind of went downhill. He can't get himself to stop playing those characters when he's playing others.
Yeah.
My favorite character of his was from Fear and Loathing. He nailed Hunter S. Thompson. Interestingly enough, at the show we did on Saturday, there was a guy dressed up as Hunter S. Thompson with a fly swatter who was running around the venue chasing imaginary bats. The most entertaining thing I'd seen in a while.
That's funny, because all the people that are into mainstream would say, the most interesting thing I saw Johnny Depp do in a while is when he took his shirt off.
No, dear Lord.
You know what I mean, the whole mainstream deal, the way everybody's crazy.
When you met me, I had teal and purple hair.
Yeah, I know, that's why you're not mainstream.
It's now the whole, hot pink, blue, and purple.
That's the whole point. The mainstream people, I don't understand that either. Everybody that is into mainstream will not even give indie film a chance. And it's ridiculous because of
that's the wonderful thing about... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interject. I saw... Did you see Eraserhead? Eraserhead?
I think
I saw it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, when it first came out. And I need to see it again because I'm one of the people who really saw more into it than I did. And so, you know, sometimes you go back and you see a movie you saw a long time ago, and you see it again and say, oh, wow, I didn't, you know, notice that before or understand it.
Mm-hmm. And I can understand this. I've seen a lot of movies that, you know, granted, we have a lot of hidden image behind them that, depending on where we're at in our life, we overlook. It's kind of the forest for the trees thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like when I was a little kid, my favorite movie was The Last Unicorn, and I watched that when I was really young. And I watched that again later, and I'm just like, wow, they made that a children's movie.
Oh, I didn't see it.
What are you talking? Seriously, think about it. Every children's movie they make when you grow up, you watch it and are like, they made that a children's movie?
Pretty much.
I was sitting watching Batman from the cartoon version from the 90s, and I didn't realize they had so much cussing in cartoons in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, I never paid attention to it. Now that I'm an adult with a kid, I'm like, dude, they really have this in cartoons.
Go back and watch Animaniacs.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
That show scarred me. I can no longer eat movie theater popcorn.
Oh. Sometimes I just stop by a movie theater to get the popcorn, and I don't stay for the movie. I love it.
Yeah, do you need a ticket, ma'am? No. I just came to get some popcorn.
I'll be right back.
I'll be on my way. Hold on a minute. What movies are playing, by the way? I didn't want to see any of them anyway.
Horrible thing when you go out on a date, you walk to the theater, and you're like, wow, you want me to pay $10 for that? Then you kind of feel, you know, obligated because you're there with someone.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, but I watch Rock of Ages.
That's my wife,
everything. Oh, yeah. George, go.
This is my nostalgic moment. I watched Rock of Ages. I'm a big fan of movies from the 80s and 90s when I grew up. And the whole movie was me sitting there with my hands over my eyes going, oh, God, no, don't kill another one.
I have to say, out of the mainstream films recently, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter was worth watching. That was actually pretty good. And so was Prometheus.
The funny thing is, a lot of the mainstream films that everybody is finding out about, like Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
That was a book series.
That wasn't really put together by a huge studio. That was brought up independently, and a huge studio picked it up and took it over, which is really cool. But a lot of people keep forgetting, especially the people that love sit down and look at mainstream. Well, mainstream, whoa! All those people forget that indie films are mainstream films because they turn into them. Prime example, The Terminator. That was an indie film. Everybody calls it mainstream, but it was an independent film. Friday the 13th, independent film.
What about The Blair Witch?
Exactly. Paranormal Activity. All of that is independent film. All of it is independent film, and everybody catches on to it, crazy about it, and they're like, I don't want to watch an independent film because it's made by somebody that locally made it, and an independent film is not good as Hollywood films. And I'm like, okay, dude, 30,000 of you just sat and bought tickets for Paranormal Activity that they shot for 15 grand, and you just put money in their pocket, and that was an independent film. You don't know the difference. You need to study more, you know? It's like,
There's some films, though, that do need the budget, I will say, indie-wise, of Hollywood studios. And Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter is a prime example of that. Terminator needed a big budget to really get the plot through. And I won't really say that much, because most big-budget films, I'm just like, where'd you spend your money? But a lot of the ones that do cross over, it does help.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what Terminator would have been like had they only had 15 grand to shoot it.
Wow.
There's a poster in Flickr. I will take a picture of it and send it to you. It's from the 80s. Oh, I wish I remember what it was called. George, it's with the machine arm and sticking up out of like a pool of water. And it looks like the worst movie ever made. Well, not ever, but yeah.
Yeah, Planet Nine from Outer Space holds that title.
I can't wait to see that when it comes out.
Yeah, John Johnson has put 5 years of blood, sweat, tears, and heart into the remake of Planet Nine. And he's done everything he can to just make it what he believed was Ed Wood's vision had he had enough resources.
Yeah.
So I just can't wait for it because it's going to be stellar. I know it is.
Well, he was really nice to work with, too, John Johnson. And, he was great. And I think he's one of the producers as well as Warren Greer of Deadlines and Tracy Lease. Well-written script that is. I just right away liked it, and I'm glad I had a chance to do something that was fun, a part that was fun to do.
I tell you, a lot of people, it's kind of like the whole mainstream deal, right? A lot of conventions don't want to book indie filmmakers and call them guests because they're indie and not mainstream. And they think that they're not a draw, but there's people like John Johnson who made Plan 9 that has made 155 films. A lot of them distributed.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Fans around the world, all right? And he just finished doing a remake of one of his own movies. He had a distribution company pay him to do a remake of one of his older films and do it as a complete interactive film. So there's over 100 different ways you can watch the film as you're going through it. You can choose. You can pick and choose how you watch it. And
really?
And when it comes out, it's going to be awesome because they're working out all the tweaks. It's going to be kind of like playing a game and watching a movie at the same time because you pick your course of how you watch the film. But the cool thing about it is it always, no matter what way you go, you always get to the same ending.
Hmm.
So it's pretty sweet.
I'll have to try that out. I haven't seen any like that, I don't think. Behind the
yeah, it's called Fear Fighter. It's called Fear Fighter.
Oh, Fear Fighter. Mm-hmm. Fear Fighter.
Yeah.
All right, and we are going to do our... Since we are doing Monsters Music and More here in Pittsburgh, and we
Yay,
are Monsters...
Pittsburgh!
Well, Camille, you're close. 27th, we are doing a great big Halloween party right here in the city of Pittsburgh.
Oh, I would love to come. I have friends there, too. More friends there than I do in Florida.
And isn't the Halloween party going to benefit Scares the Care? A little bit?
That's the running plan.
That's our plan, ran into a speed bump with that, but we're...
That's the running plan.
Yeah.
We're working on stuff, but yeah, that's the running plan. We're going to send them a donation check from it. Vampire Santa, your friend Sal, is going to be hosting. Green Man,
yes,
who I'm sure you... I'm sure you remember
if
Green
you
Man
guys
from the Sci-Fi Valley.
Get him
Valley
to dress
con.
Up as the Abner Zombie. If you can, talk Sal into being the Abner Zombie for the Halloween party. For
we
a little bit, somehow. He'd have to be Santa some, but you gotta get him as the zombie band. Because he's a completely different character as the zombie. Has a completely different look. And it is awesome to see. So you ought to talk to him about it, see if he'll be able to do it.
Well, considering Pittsburgh is the zombie capital of the world, I think we could probably pull that off.
It's the world capital of the world?
The zombie capital of the world.
Oh,
We started zombies.
Oh, I was
you know,
also
you know
going
what's
to
great
say
about
for
that,
the Monsters Music and More event, we're going to have, you'll probably remember, Green Man from the Sci-Fi Valley calling. The Pittsburgh Steel Man is coming out. We also have the after-party bands, Lugaroo and Radioactive, as well as White vs. Blight and Pittsburgh's own pirate-themed band with the most interesting name I could think of, the Bloody Seaman, will be probably drunk. Because they're pirates, yeah.
That's awesome. Yep. But you know what? I got to say this. It's an honor because we have something really cool on the show right now. We have people from the zombie capital of the world, and then we have me. And I was born and raised in the moonshine capital of the world.
Yeah.
What was that?
So,
that too.
Franklin County, Virginia, which is actually what they made the movie Lawless about. That Shia LaBeouf is in. They wrote a book on it back in the back during the Prohibition. The cops and the Commonwealth attorneys actually put a stronghold on the moonshiners and got them to pay fees, kind of like a gangster would, protection fees, in order for them to be able to run moonshine in the town. And there was a group of boys that would not pay the fees, and they started shipping out of town, and we actually had the biggest moonshine bust in history happen then. They came in and busted them because they wouldn't pay their protection fees. And all the story came out, and the Commonwealth attorney and everybody else went down for all the illegal stuff that they were doing. And that's basically what the entire movie is about, and it's based on a book called The Wettest County in the World. And I actually wrote a song and submitted it to the producers that I thought could have been awesome to play during the ending credits. But they changed the title of the movie to Lawless, and they had a mainstream guy that does musical scores say, there will be no music other than mine in the film. So they had to turn me down.
Wow.
But I put this song, I put the song in the bar scene of my film Midnight Matinee Psycho.
Cool.
So it worked out good anyway, because I got
isn't
to
that
use
it. Anyway, so Watching Music and More is October 27th, and we have, what, one more show between now and then. Are we going to be doing a ticket giveaway next week?
Well, I'm going to open it up right now. We're going to ask the question because we'll give people, you know, a week to see if they can find the answer.
Okay.
The answer will be due next week. The question is, since this is Monsters and More, who was the very first guest who was on Monsters and More Radio? You give us the correct name, you will get a pair of tickets to Monsters Music and More here in Pittsburgh.
And we will be posting the question up on our Facebook as well, so people can stop back, visit it, and check out what our next show's about.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a big online audience that I think is afraid of their telephones. I know some of mine are.
Yeah, and like I said, Camille, if you would
love
to come.
You basement dwellers? Yeah, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
No, I was yelling at my people that listen. I was like, listen here, you basement dwellers. Call in and answer trivia.
Call in, do something. You can call in and talk to all the guests, which actually
you can call in
call
and recite the answer in binary.
You know, having call-ins makes interviews way more fun for fans, especially when you have somebody
call
like
in.
Bill Keaton.
There you go.
I mean,
hey, you know what?
I do have a call-in.
Do I call in the number I called in to?
Yep.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you not hear us?
I can hear you guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Well, in that case, okay. She's still on the phone, so she's a call-in.
Derek.
Yeah.
I have a question. What do you consider maybe the most horrific or most the scariest movie that you've seen, or one or two of them in your lifetime?
Well, actually, that's funny. There are three films for me that are, to me, very horrific, and it's because of the realism that it brings. And mm-hmm. One would be I Spit on Your Grave. The original, not the sucky remake. Two
mm-hmm.
would be The Birds, which was luckily
yeah.
thrown
wow.
in there earlier. And three would be Last House on the Left, starring David Hess.
Cool. Yeah.
Mine, I can think of one. Spice World.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, God.
That was the scariest movie ever made in my book. Who was
who was in that?
The Spice Girls.
Spice World.
Oh, okay.
The movie
yeah,
about
it was
the Spice
horrific.
Girls. I don't know. I think the Justin Bieber movie may have beat that.
Luckily, I was so far away from
He's
middle school culture by that time that I'm good.
Sorry to cut this short, but our hour went by very fast. Thank you, everyone, for calling. Tune in next week. Thank you all for coming, and we'll see you next week.
More call-ins. Thank you, Derek.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. You guys
bye.
Have a good night.
You too. Okay, bye.